On the other hand, to tell a man faced with death that he's not going to be killed, so that his last thought, in a way, when he's, so to speak, when they're about to visit him, is that he's lied to him, is not a thing that we feel comfortable to carry the rest of our life. What should a man do? That's what moral philosophy is about. Of course you can answer. You can say, three lives are going to be saved. I'm a British officer, my duty. It's exactly like Lord Aldington. I've given orders, I've got to return these people. No. Say, which I can't help it. I'm a soldier, I'm on duty. I'm not going to, I can't suddenly start hesitating and waffling about. The only way to win the war is by discipline. Accepting orders as they're given, not Christian. That's one way out. Well, if you really believe that, you're happy. You've done it, it's okay. But if you're somebody who's sensitive, you don't know what to do. What this man did, I cannot tell you. But I wasn't told. I didn't want to. But what would you have done? What would I have done? I know what I would have done.
Which was?
I would not have cross-examined him. I couldn't. I would have done my best. I would have said, look, I'll try to help you. I'll try and persuade them. But I can't guarantee that you're going to be, your life is saved. No. I can't promise that. I cannot. You may be shot. Tomorrow morning. Well, I'll talk to them too. Could do that. But, and if there's not enough, and unless you promise, you get from them a promise that I shall survive, then I think, probably, you ought to lie. And you ought to lie because you are saving the lives of innocent people. This man is not innocent, he's got a lot of crimes on his conscience. Who may not succeed, but unless this is done...
Other people may die.
Yes. Yeah. So, and you're only doing the other thing because you are uncomfortable. You're trying to save yourself from nightmares.
And squeamishness, yes.
With nightmares.
I think there's no doubt. Yes.
You have nightmares afterwards. You have awful nightmares afterwards by doing this horrible thing. You see? All right.
So you've got to get your hands dirty.
Otherwise, don't go to war at all. You see what I mean? Shoot yourself. Commit suicide, rather than that. It's like, look, same problem about these Jewish leaders of these Jewish communities. Remember, in Gestapo held territories. Yeah. The Gestapo officer appears before you. And he says, look, you know the names and addresses of all the Jews here. We need to know them because we're going to send them to productive labor in Poland. You will know that this isn't true. They're probably being sent. But let's assume it. We're not deceived. Now, if you tell us, you can escape yourself with your life and take out 47 other people with you. Or 120, so you like. If you don't tell us, we'll find them all and kill yourself. In the end, obviously, we will discover them. And they'll all die, probably. We'll arrest them all. And let's say die. We'll arrest them all in the end. It's very difficult to escape from these rebellions. We're in power. Yeah. What do you do? There are four possibilities. One is that you say, no, I'm not playing your game. Do whatever you want. I'm not going to give you names and addresses. Act whatever you want. I'm not collaborating. The second, then you probably shot yourself in the end. Will perish. The probabilities. Second alternative, you go, tell them, look, you say, he's all right. I'll give you these names and addresses, you do. Then you go and tell them quickly. And they're in grave danger. And they must flee. They flee and are found quite soon. And the possibility of flight from the heart of Lithuania.
I mean,
somebody may escape. But broadly, they're going to be condemned. Most. The third possibility, you commit suicide. I can't face this. Fourth is what you do. You give them the names of these people, and you get off with your 147. Now, what should you do? Miss Arendt was quite clear about that. She thought they ought not collaborate at any level. I asked a pious Jew who looks out the Rothschild Foundation. He says, I'm quite clear. According to Jewish law, you are not allowed to participate in something that leads to a murder, innocent man. Therefore, you can't own me. You must die. Or you must just refuse. That is the law. Because that's the Talmud. Mm-hmm. That's what God, ordained by God. And, no problem. Now, what do you do? The answer to that problem is, whatever you do, is going to be condemned and praised. In such a situation, ordinary rules of morality don't apply, because it's an abnormal situation. So abnormal that whatever you do will lead to bad and good results. Just do what you do. Do what you are moved through. There's no way of retrospect. Well, one of these people did do that. He did give these names, and some relation of one of these people was killed. And then this man went to Israel, the man who the head of the given community. And the other man then attacked him, libeled him, as it were, attacked him for conniving with the Nazis. And this man brought the suit for libel. And the lower court found that he was innocent. Ooh. And the next court found he was guilty. And the court after that found he was innocent again.
Ooh.
And then he was assassinated by this man who originally wrote to him. Killed. Right. Okay. For the situation, there's absolutely no solution to this kind of thing. And there's no good looking one. And the idea that all real questions have rational solutions just ain't true.
Well, I mean, to lower, that's why perdition was such a vile play, because it assumed that there was a possible right answer to
it. Oh, no, of course. They shouldn't have done it, yes. Well, perdition to lies.
Oh, yeah, yes.
To some extent.
But
apart from them, the real problem is what you say, of course. Mm. That's what it turned on. They saved that.
I think what I find so heartrending about those dilemmas in a curious way is that the one option that is foreclosed, and so cruelly foreclosed, would be to refuse in such circumstances that people would know why you had refused. I mean, if you have the option to commit suicide, or to tear up the note, or to defy the Nazi officer, and then leave some message
that you've done it,
allows the world to understand the meaning of your actions. I think one of the things that I find always makes me weep when I think about the Holocaust is not merely that people were placed in excruciating moral circumstances and then killed in the most unspeakable ways, but that you know, along with 6 million lives, there were just countless acts of courage, defiance, bravery,
which are not known about,
excruciating forms of moral
which nobody knows,
perished without a trace, so that men would make this
they
choice that you and I are discussing.
They can't learn.
In
they can't.
Safety.
They can't learn from it.
Yes. And human life has lost all that. Choosing,
I mean,
all that.
Not even some moral arises from it. Nothing is left to the world to illuminate moral behavior of people placed in a terrible situation.
Which is why, of all, you know, everybody has certain things that move them terribly about these things, but I suppose the things that move me so much are the little pieces of paper dropped from the trains, you know, people trying to write to someone,
yes,
anyone.
Some, what's going on?
You know, seems to me.
So even save us things. Oh, they're terrible, these bits of paper. We're going to our death, save us. Do something. Well, of course, moral guilt is very great, but everyone always blames those for not perhaps doing enough. That's what people, and they're all right to reproach themselves. They could have done more.
Oh.
Almost everybody in such situations can do more than they do. It's in a very, very...
Your fax is here.
Let me go. Because there's no copyright, because my thing was published before the copyright convention. And they didn't have to pay.
Oh, really?
And what happened was this. That, yes, my Italian friend, yes, Signor Castaldo, reviewed something which was published by again by saying, skating when I was, so on, paid the conference. He said, I was something about, there was a shock to reading a venomous review in the Times. Yeah. How that gets to him. Yeah, yeah. Why should he, as some of us have said to him, and he called him Velenoso, which is venomous.
Venenoso.
Velenoso.
Veleno.
Veleno is poison.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. Italian.
Very good.
That is Italian poison.
Very good.
Venomous. Velenoso, vile.
Vile.
That's all right. And something else. Contemptible something. He then went on saying, one of the criticisms of me was that I frittered away such abilities I had in social life. This might be true, but after all, Proust and Saint-Simon also had.
Also frittered away.
And yet they wrote quite well. The answer is, of course, they used it in their writings, or
yes.
I can't be said to have done that. Yeah. That's the main difference. He didn't stress it. But Velenosa is Recensione Velenosa.
Yes.
That was extraordinary that some Italian men Turin
should find that.
Find that.
But obviously, man after your own heart, he should regard
indeed
it as Velenosa.
Oh, Dr. Castaldo, don't forget his name. Splendid fellow.
Good for you. Good for you. I did want to talk to you a little bit about Europe, in fact, because given that, you know, we're talking at a moment when they're absolutely streaming out of East Germany as fast as their legs can carry them, and the Hungarians are talking about a multi-party system and all that. We are in the sort of springtime of nations. It's like, feels like the springtime of 1848. Whether the Tsar autocrat is now going to saddle his horse and ride down upon us.
Yes, I have just told you, and my memory gives me about the two banners in the counter-demonstration in Moscow. Reported by the...
Oh, no, no, tell me.
Reported in the... What not? In the Independent.
Yes, saying?
Well, one of them says... See that. One of them says...
struggle
our 78 journey... Our 78 journey into nothing.
Oh, yeah.
The other says, proletarians of the world, proletarians of all nations, we apologize. We're sorry, is what it says. The Russian of that would be, forgive us. Извините.
Извините.
Извините, you see. Wonderful. Terribly witty. Proletarians. Proletarians, tell us Trump. Proletarians of all nations.
We're terrible. Извините.
Forgive us.
Absolutely.
That kind of wit really is only beautifully Russian. The English and the Russians are wittier in their own way.
Yeah.
Than anybody else in that way.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have that sort of thing in Germany, France, Italy, just possibly.
Yeah. So what happens, Azai? Where are we going? What's that? Where are we headed?
Well, I'll tell you, we're not going to world capitalism, which is what that idiotic
Fukuyama.
Japanese is.
Yes, idiot. Yeah.
Yeah. But then some kind of Hegelian synthesis is obviously going to happen.
Right.
But we can't begin to say what it's going to look like. These people on the whole are not anti-socialist.
Mm-hmm.
They're certainly anti-despotism and oppression and so on, but they don't want the capitalist system.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what they're after. And yet, all the polls who come to All Souls still, one by one, call them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, you are, see, people say you are against the present government, because I have rather. But I don't understand. It is freedom. The capitalist system is a system which produces the greatest number of free alternatives for the individual. How can you be? You are in favor of liberty. Capitalism is the most libertarian movement in history.
Mm.
What if you're against it?
Yes, yes.
That is said by these people.
Yes. And Mrs. Thatcher's speeches circulate in Samizdat at Solidarność meetings in Warsaw.
I don't know.
So she, you know, and well, Hayek too, and Popper,
everyone,
and
Popper.
All that stuff.
I'm sure that's true.
This is the great liberating tonic of that.
Well, but Sakharov's two heroes, as you do, were Mrs. Thatcher and Reagan.
Mm.
Heroic figures to them.
This gives one pause.
Well, the word right and left tells a lot of meaning.
Yes.
I mean, what's Ligachev? He's right-wing,
yeah.
But he's a author of Marxism.
Yeah.
Where are we?
Yes, where are we?
No, but I would like to interview those Eastern Europeans because I feel that the whole...
No, individually you can. Some of them are highly intelligent. And they come to England now in enormous quantities.
Yes.
My man went back and said, you know, I will explain to you what they did. It is a question of genes. You know, there are dominant genes and recessive genes. Dominant genes, of course, we know. But the recessive genes sometimes come out in the third generation. These intelligentsia, they are product of
recessive genes. That's very good.
Sweet.
Yes.
Anyway, what is the idea? What is the idea?
Do you think
I'll tell you. I think there's enormous vitality in the Soviet Union. Sheer human vitality. Intellectual, moral, physical, which can go in any direction, good and bad. But the energy, the accumulated energy and the block, the absolutely suppressed
creativity
is there. And it can burst out. It hasn't yet. Because the Communist Party to some degree is still in control. I don't think that's true of the Western of satellites.
Really?
So much.
Really?
I don't think enormous creativity really. And that's my great Russian point of view.
Yes, that sounds very...
chauvinism, yes.
The Poles don't like that much.
Poles, I think, might. I don't think Hungarians will have suppressed stuff. Mm. All right, I mean, but I don't think... They won't have been able to put out what they wanted to put out. Czechs, I didn't believe in Czech genius. Ever since Jakobs, my great friend, the linguist, introduced me to a Czech novelist in Harvard called Sohuchkova, who used to come to my lectures. He said to me, you know, she's studying a Czech novelist. He wrote 110 novels, none of them any good.
Oh, but come on, don't you have a soft spot for Czech interwar democracy, for the Masaryk?
Oh, yes. Busho.
Masaryk defending the Jews against blood libel. There's a kind of Central European liberalism which he incarnated, which is still...
No, Masaryk is a very, very brave and good man. Mm. He really was. I mean, the mere fact that he and Slovak should have exposed as a forgery the Slovak ethic, which somebody invented, which it took some doing.
Yeah.
But this is a thing which all Slovaks began to pray to.
Yes.
Some pseudo-medieval epic which meant to be the great Slovak work.
Yes.
And he exposed it as a forgery. For the Slovak to have done that is an extremely good thing.
Heroic work.
No,
yes.
And he was a man of unimpeachable integrity. Now the whole Czechoslovakia at that period was absolutely okay.
Yes.
Well, they were said to have oppressed the Subcarpathian Ruthenians. I don't know about it.
Hmm.
Around down the corner.
Yeah.
And
I was just looking again at a biography of Tsvetaeva, and she's getting her pension from the Czechs in the 30s, and they're paying her pension even when she's in Clamart.
Tsvetaeva.
Even when she's in misery in Clamart.
You still know,
in
getting money from
that's a good government, it seems to me. Yeah. Getting it from the Czechs.
What is it? I forgot to tell you what you said.
The news is gone.
The Politburo is gone. Not only the government.
The Politburo.
Yes. The dam is bursting.
But what about the leader?
Krenz.
What is possible? Is there a Politburo? Is it still there? It's going very fast.
Too fast, you think?
In a way.
I don't know what
it means, though,
Politburo.
The sect? I mean, the Communist Party.
That means
that, of course, designed.
Yeah.
But I mean, that means the leaders of the Communist Party. They must be in order to do it by the, by, what's the name?
By Krenz.
Krenz, yes.
Yeah,
Krenz.
He's in a former government.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. No, I didn't know.
I think
the West Germans are going to try and block the entrance.
Yes.
At some point.
Yes.
Already at the beginning, they're thinking we have jobs and whatever we do we have.
But don't you think stepping back from all this, that you might, at the end of your life, return to an absolutely unforeseen historical result, which is that the Europe that you were born in, a Europe in which there was really no cultural frontier between Petersburg and Liverpool, say, in which there will be states and there will be divisions and there will be, but there will be different traditions, but in which there will be one Europe.
One Europe.
Will return.
I think it will, yes. I think it will. Perhaps not quite my lifetime, but I think it will.
Mm. Well, that's rather touching, don't you?
Very, very, very good. Everything good and bad will float up. Mm. There'll be civil wars.
Really?
Well, there isn't right and left bound to be. Mm. And there are reactionists, there are liberals, there are socialists. Sooner or later, some coagulation will occur between these parties, and there'll be scraps of some kind. Civil war is not too strong. There'll be some kind of collisions about to occur. It can't all become a peaceful, social, democratic, enlightened.
From the Urals
liberal
to
state,
the Atlantic.
From the Urals to the Atlantic.
Where do you think the trouble will be worst, or where will it come first?
Very difficult. I wonder. You see, I don't see a natural symbiosis, for example, the Russians and Poles, even now. I don't see a natural symbiosis in Poles and Germans, even now. So, there are bound to be friction on those borders. Wars, no. In Russia, there could be nationalist reaction movement. I don't see it'll succeed, but I think there'll be a wave of it. At some point, a touch and go situation, in which they might make alliances with the nationalities and even, to some extent, put up with some degree of disintegration of the Soviet Union, provided they can keep what might be called ethnic Russian frontiers, Ukrainian Russian frontiers, all that could happen. And so the Jews, of course, will suffer. As always, any blah blah, they're the first to be hit, naturally enough. But
I suppose if one means that there's a possibility of a kind of reunified Europe along the lines of that almost began to exist in your childhood and also came to an end in your childhood, I suppose that also implies something about the possibilities of political change in the Soviet Union. The possibility that...
Look, I think the cultural unity will arrive much earlier than any kind of political or economic unity.
Yes.
That I'm sure of, because the intelligentsia likes, connects.
Yes.
There's some degree of... I have this passionate, old-fashioned belief in the solidarity of the real intelligentsia, not the people who run the Spectator.
Yes.
I don't mean them.
Yes.
I don't mean private eye. I mean more or less a sort of...
Or the people who run the European Common Market, for God's sake.
Not that either. Yeah. No. But the contributors to ordinary highbrow journals, even the TLS, everything of that sort. Yes. These people will come into some sort of contact with, will do to be influenced by, will have some kind of relationship with. You see, take Russia now. The fact that surrealist poetry is being written now. I mean, it's called, I don't know, conceptualism. But it's quite mad. A man came and recited it in Oxford the other day. One of them. The fact that that should be happening is the best symptom of the fact that Russia, as it was in 1910, when Marinetti arrived, or 12, Marinetti arrived and planted a lot of surrealism in Russia, which went over, extremely big, and Mayakovsky was a result.
Yes.
You see?
Yes.
In other words, cultural contact is bound to occur.
Yes. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
But the only thing I'm afraid of is quite a lot of bogus stuff may find itself.
Yes.
All the sort of Central European muddle. I don't know, sort of, you know what I mean? Lukács, come, comfort, come.
Yes.
Come, I don't know what.
They'll drink at those wells.
What?
They'll drink at those wells.
They'll drink at those wells. I don't know whether or not, I don't think Russians are very liable to drink. I said to my Russian friend, my Hungarian friend, came to see him, at least a friend, I just said, around half of it, his Hungarian philosopher in Budapest. Are the Russians now interested? Yes, a lot is going on in Russia about philosophy. The Marxism is out, and they are really being quite serious. He thought about much freer. So I said, well, who are the philosophers that are dealing with? Oh, Solovyov,
Berdyaev.
I said, look, these are theologians.
Yeah.
I have nothing against them. But that, you never realize, I said, the Russians haven't produced a single philosopher in the academic sense. Thinkers, yes, of course. Herzl is a thinker. Mm. Nietzsche is a thinker. But he wouldn't have had a chair in philosophy, exactly.
Mm.
Chair in the classics, yes.
Okay.
You see, in that sense, the Russians are simply rather dreary provinces of Germany. There were professors, but they were just third-rate Kantians, neo-Kantians. They all went to listen to Hermann Cohen's lectures. Quite all right, they knew the stuff.
Yeah.
There's not a spark of original thought who's ever made any impression anyway.
Yeah.
Well, have you heard of Lossky? Yeah. Well, no point, I think.
Yeah.
And so on. He said, we're all troubled by this.
Mm.
He said, but you know, we in Hungary do have no philosophers apart from Lukács. I said, well,
you still don't.
What am I going to revive? Well, I forgot to ask him about was the labor theory of language. This is the domain.
Yeah.
Well, I think it'll happen all right.
Mm.
And I think, I don't think a lot of positivism will ever get there, and particularly Western empiricism will ever get there.
Mm.
If it does, it'll go forward by leaps and bounds. I'll be very good at it.
Yes.
They will.
But liberalism and all the kind of philosophical apparatus that goes with liberalism, the kind of liberal skepticism, the kind of epistemology of doubt, all the stuff that underpins liberalism, I've never thought will travel very well at all in Russia.
This is true. And you can't think of anybody. Well, in a sense, Herzen was rather skeptical liberal,
yes,
in many ways.
Yeah. But my grandfather, when I look deeply at my grandfather, who's always described as a liberal, and I get right down inside him, what I see, in fact, is not skepticism and irony at all, but the most pious kind of Tolstoyan earnestness you can imagine.
Exactly.
And full of rubbish, I mean, to my way of thinking, but rather moving rubbish about the peasants.
But connected with a certain decency.
Oh, indeed.
It's the decency which makes him call liberal.
Right.
There were no decent conservatives in a certain sense.
Yes.
Decent Tsarist. I mean, decent right wing Tsarist is not possible.
Yeah.
I don't think that exists.
Yeah. I mean, but no. A decency, a decent